All rise.
The State of Washington Court of Appeals, Division 1, is now in session. Honorable Marvel Cox, good night.
Good morning.
Please be seated. State versus Avalos is the first case. And the parties are ready, I take it? Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. Lisa Elner on behalf of Mr. Carlos Avalos. I'd like to discuss two...
Could you tell me if you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, thank you. I'll reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Three? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to rest on the briefs on the restitution issue and the state's conceded on the sentencing issue, so I'd like to discuss the two due process issues. The first one, Mr. Avalos was denied his due process right to a fair trial by the trial court's unreasonable limitation on closing argument. The court has discretion to limit argument, but it's not unfettered. And the court can limit closing when counsel is off the mark, not arguing facts, arguing from the case, when he's redundant or repetitive. And Herring versus New York United States Supreme Court made this quite clear, and I rarely quote, but I would like to quote this passage with your permission. The constitutional right of a defendant to be heard through counsel necessarily includes his right to have his counsel make a proper argument on the evidence and the applicable law in his favor, however simple, clear, unimpeached, and conclusive the evidence may seem. Here, counsel had 28 minutes to argue a rather complex case.
What was complex about this case?
You had an assault in the first degree. You had an exceptional sentence allegation. You had 13 witnesses, including Mr. Avalos. You had a five-day trial. Counsel needed to argue against assault one, against assault two, and for custodial assault. He had to argue against egregious lack of remorse. He had 28 minutes. He was successful in arguing the first two, against assault one and against egregious lack of remorse, but he was given no opportunity to argue custodial assault. There was evidence in the record, evidence by the court giving jury instruction 16, which was the custodial assault instruction. Given counsel's success, there's certainly the standard, there's a harmless error test here. It's impossible to determine beyond a reasonable doubt the outcome would have been the same had the court considered Mr. Avalos's right to argue the facts and the law together. In Willis, you had the judge make a decision very similar, our state Supreme Court, to this case, where the court said, long day, got to close the courtroom. I understand that you have concerns here, but they're not important enough for me to keep the courtroom open. In Willis, the court didn't go into great detail about why it closed the courtroom other than the defense counsel didn't have notice that he was limited to 30 minutes. And the court said, not enough time to argue a Berg II with one piece of evidence that was sent out for a lab for analysis. The court did say you have to look at the factors I just discussed, the complexity, the length of trial. Here you had a lot of witnesses. You had several medical experts. You had medical experts who described the injuries as superficial. Had defense counsel been able to argue in detail that Mr. Avalos was guilty only of custodial assault, I'm submitting to this course that he could have prevailed. Certainly the court, there wasn't evidence sufficient, overwhelming evidence of assault one, the charge, or egregious lack of remorse to find that the error was not harmless. I'd ask this court to find that not only did you have an abuse of discretion because the court didn't consider due process rights and simply wanted to close the courtroom. The court pretty much acknowledged that when he said, you know, I understand that you have rights here, they're important and you need more time, but it's been a long day. Clerk's been here too long, I'm closing the courtroom, period. That was an abuse of discretion, and it was prejudicial because he didn't get to argue for custodial assault. So under Herring and Willis, I'd ask this court to reverse and remand on that basis. And as a note, the state's cases support Mr. Avalos's argument. They all say you can limit, there's a limit on the abuse of discretion. You can limit argument when it doesn't infringe on the defendant's rights. And the cases cited by the state, I believe Erickson, which is 1905, cites an 1855 case that goes back to the Greco-Roman times where they said the orators then could, you know, easily come up with summation. In this petty case, modern orator, 15 minutes was adequate for determining whether or not milk was watered down or wood was taken from a school. This is not that kind of a case. This is a man's life and liberty. It was an assault, egregious lack of resort, many witnesses, and a lengthy trial. So the state's cases are distinguishable, and I'd argue they actually support Mr. Avalos's position.
Are your arguments that this was a complex matter, therefore requiring more than 30 minutes, undercut by the way the evidence came in terms of the defendant acknowledging most of the critical facts?
No, because I think he acknowledged that he assaulted the officer while the officer was at work, which is custodial assault. He didn't acknowledge substantial injury. He didn't acknowledge. He said he wanted to leave a mark so he wouldn't be attacked in prison by other prisoners. But he didn't say, I left permanent marks. He simply said, yes, I committed this act. But there was no affirmation of an extent of an injury, and assault, custodial assault, doesn't require any sort of description of the injury. You simply have to assault an officer while they're on duty. So that's all he admitted. So I would say no. The last argument I want to discuss is misconduct. And no disrespect to my colleague here, the prosecutor committed reversible misconduct, and it was flagrant and ill-intentioned. And the focus is not on the evidence that was admitted under Glassman, but really on the impact of the misconduct. Well, the prosecutor said one thing he kept repeating that is absolute nonsense, that is absolutely 100% not true. And you know what that thing was? Question mark. This isn't just telling the jury. This is asking the jury to think about, to let this sit in. He says, I bet you can guess. Again, the jury is thinking. This is sinking in. I didn't intend to kill. I only intended to inflict minor injuries. Whether intentional or not, the impact was the jury heard 100% not true. Think about it. Sit in. You can guess. Think about it again. Then intent, no intent to kill. This was prejudicial misconduct. It wasn't curable by an instruction. And to prevail, you have to show both misconduct and prejudice. Misconduct's flagrant and ill-intentional, and the prosecutor knows it's denounced by the courts and for a century. Certainly since State versus Case, which I believe is 1956, almost every case our Supreme Court has issued on prosecutorial misconduct says quite clearly you may not use the prestige of your office to offer an opinion unless it's a reasonable inference from the evidence. There was no reasonable inference here that Mr. Avalos was anything but credible. I'll go into my remaining time. In Glassman, the court reversed because the prosecutor put up a PowerPoint and said, do you believe him? Why would you believe him? The court said in that case credibility was essential to the lesser included offense. They said it couldn't have been cured. There was no objection and no curative, but had there been, it would have been incurable. Here, you had the same thing. Disregard the entire defense case, which was Mr. Avalos's testimony. You had an instruction, curative instruction, that was well articulated, but it wasn't adequate. The court in Bruton said we never know what the jury actually, what they listen to and what they don't. But given the delivery of the statement by the prosecutor to think about it, you can imagine the pause, the time the jury thought, you can't unring that bell. The jury heard not credible. And yes, they didn't return assault one, but they also didn't return custodial assault, in part because perhaps they listened to he wasn't credible. And perhaps because of the first argument, counsel was unable to make that argument to the jury. Certainly, the likelihood the outcome would have been impacted is clear. This is not a case where you can say with any sort of certainty that the evidence was overwhelming, because it wasn't, as evidenced by there was no egregious lack of remorse, no assault one, and you had a jury instruction on assault, on custodial assault, judge telling everybody this is on the table because there's evidence to support it. So I'd ask the court on those basis to reverse and remand for a new trial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have 1 minute of rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Josh Choate. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I'm representing the state in this matter. Your Honor, the jury verdict in this case should be upheld for two reasons. First being that there was no misconduct in the closing argument, but even if this court were to find that there were, the jury verdict itself is conclusive evidence that there was no prejudice to Mr. Avalos through the statements that he complains about. Secondly, with due respect to my colleagues, it's not a complex trial. The limitation on closing arguments was fair to both sides. Both sides got approximately a half an hour. After Mr. Avalos testified, this trial became even much more less complex than it was prior to his testimony. The trial, I suppose, technically lasted 5 days, but day one was jury selection. We put on evidence, both parties, for about 2.5 days. We did closing arguments on the end of that fourth day, and then the verdict came back the morning of the fifth day. So it actually was a pretty short trial. We did have an expert witness, but he was there for the limited purpose of talking about the injuries that Eric Huther suffered and whether or not those met the bar for assault one. Clearly, the jury was able to decide and come to a decision about that, given that the closing arguments were only half hour long on each side. And once Mr. Avalos testified, he admitted to custodial assault. There's no argument to be made, and if you read the closing argument of counsel, he wanted the jury to find that this was a custodial assault. That would have resulted in the most favorable sentence for Mr. Avalos, of course. So he didn't have a plan, and it's clear from the record. He didn't have a need to argue that this was a custodial assault instead of the other two crimes that were on the table, because Mr. Avalos admitted to that crime. It simply wasn't in dispute. He did argue at length about whether or not it was an assault one, and he argued at length about whether or not it was an assault two. So he was able to cover all of the bases that needed to be covered in order to service his client. Regarding the the closing argument, Your Honor, if I could do it again, I would have done what I did on the next page, which was say that Mr. Avalos's words were nonsense in the light of the rest of the evidence that you've heard. And that is what I was trying to get to, and I was interrupted. I don't think that the comment that his statements were nonsense was improper. Again, by the time he testified, 90% of the facts in the case were no longer in dispute, and he did have a robotic affect when he would talk about whether or not he had the intent to kill Mr. Huther. He had clearly rehearsed that language, and he would tell his story, and then he would shift gears and say, but I did not have the intent to kill, and he repeated that statement. You'll see it in the record many, many, many times, and the point to be made there was, he got up, and he was pretty truthful about what he did to an extent, and he knew where to stop, and his stopping at that particular point was in effect an admission that he's only going to go so far. He knows he's facing a much potentially serious punishment if he goes and tells the whole truth in this case. But if you look at all the evidence, it's clear. If you look at the pictures of Mr. Huther and what happened to him, you look at the fact that the assault was so prolonged and all the blows were to the neck, head, and face, his statements were nonsense. And I'd stand by that. But the most important thing for purposes of this appeal is that the jury verdict, when it came back, it's conclusive proof that they weren't buying what I had to say about whether there was intent to kill or not. They clearly found, the jury, that there was no intent to kill, and that's why they went with the assault too. The intent to kill issue is irrelevant to the assault too. So when the statement that's complained about, I don't think there's any dispute that it was an argument about whether or not Mr. Avalos had the intent to kill. Once the jury finds that he did not, then clearly Mr. Avalos can't establish the required prejudice that he would need to in order to garner a reversal of the conviction. Your Honor, those are the points I had to make about those two issues. I'm happy to, if the court has questions about the restitution order, answer those. I did want to point specifically to CP 457 and CP 459 regarding the award to L&I. If you look on those two pages, you'll see on 457 a $30,841 figure relating to time loss, and on CP 469 a $15,142 figure relating to medical expenses paid by L&I.
Is that 459 or 469?
469 for the medical, 457 for the time loss, If you add those together, that's the amount that Judge Melly ordered, and so it was supported by evidence. He didn't abuse his discretion. And Mr. Huther actually did a really thorough job coming up with the documentation for the $3,300 that he requested. Looks to me like the court gets it, but the $16,000 was a kind of a, I don't want to call it a made-up figure, but it wasn't a figure that the state was asking for. It was a figure that defense counsel during the restitution hearing came up with in order to make an argument that the award to Mr. Huther should be offset by that amount because he didn't have to drive to the prison and back every day to go to work, so he saved some money that way. The sentencing issue, Your Honor, as well, the state does concede. I think, unfortunately, there does need to be the trial court was really close on this, but there needs to be a finding regarding same criminal conduct rather than same course of conduct in order for that to stand up. So unless Your Honors have any questions for me, I'll sit down.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Robotic was not on the record, and it's not a reasonable inference to be read into the record in this case. Mr. Avalos, what's on the record is that he was 19 years old when he committed this offense. He has mental health issues. He's a small man in prison with large men. He was prejudiced because he did not receive a verdict of custodial assault. That should have been on the table. He should have been had time. Counsel should have been able to argue that. And counsel should not have said he wasn't credible because there is nothing in the record to indicate that anything he said was nonsense. He was quite forthcoming about his vulnerabilities, about how he took this piece, this toy part, and he sharpened it and he tried, you know, and he was afraid. There's nothing. There's not a shred of evidence the state can point to that would allow him to argue that it was nonsense. It's simply his personal opinion. That is forbidden. That is misconduct. And the prejudice lies in the fact that the jury did not return a verdict of custodial assault. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. The next matter is State versus McKinnon.